Hello and welcome to Life in the Transition, the renewable energy transition. The biggest change in our industrial systems, societies, ways of life since the Industrial Revolution. This show asks some big questions. What's changing? How fast is it really changing? Who's changing it? And why? Welcome to Transmission, where myself, Mark Spencer, will be talking to people who can help answer these questions. People who, like myself in my own small way, are working towards an energy-abundant, renewable, sustainable future for our power systems, our societies, our whole planet. It's an exciting, incredible, mind-bending time. So we'll explore things that are hard to grasp, concepts that may be unfamiliar to you, those that are barely even invented, and some that are hidden and opaque, but are already affecting our worlds, whether we realize it or not. I welcome you to these transmissions from the renewable energy transition. Today's transmission is from Albert Park Lake in Narm, Melbourne, the lands of the Bunurong people of the Kulin Nation. David Hauser is a German-born and educated long-term resident of Narm, Melbourne. After a 10-year career in the machine tool industry with clients like Mercedes, Bosch, Airbus, Samsung, and more, David joined Silicon Beach, a startup community in Sydney and Melbourne, and is now the founder of Elliott, or the Electrified Internet of Things, which is a network of appliance-level batteries and control mechanisms, bringing decentralized energy resources down to the level of the fridge in your local convenience store. How will energy storage get distributed as widely as possible, as quickly as possible? It's solutions like Elliott that are part of a basket of solutions that we're starting to see appear. And you'll hear more on what that is and how it works in this chat with David. Thanks for tuning into this transmission. Enjoy. So the whole format is this. It's getting out of studios, it's getting out of interviews, and it's just having a chat with people in a beautiful place like Albert Park Lake. So good morning, David. How are you?
I'm very well. I was a little bit, at around 7, I thought, crap, do I really have to get out of bed?
When you told me you wanted to meet at 8, and I wasn't even back from my hike until I got back to the city, went straight to the Capitol Theater in the city for the Aboriginal All-Stars comedy show, still in hiking gear. And then I got home at like 11. I was like, what? But I'm very happy to be here now. It's a lovely, crisp morning. The joggers are jogging. And we're strolling, which is the right way to do it.
You're not a jogger?
Not a jogger. No, I hike and I bike and I gym and I swim, and that's enough.
Okay.
And walk and talk. Hey, there's my last two. Walk and talk, gym and swim, bike and hike.
Good.
That's enough.
Good. Yeah, I was out during COVID as well when I discovered that it's quite easy to put the shoes on and go for a little bit of a run compared to a lot of other things.
Yeah.
And you can do it everywhere. So
yeah.
I tried to get back into it. Then I had two rounds of COVID myself. And the second round correlated with a bulged disc in my neck.
Oh, God.
Which pretty much derailed all my fitness routines back then. And it took me basically 1 year to get the motivation back.
Oh, no. So moral of the story is don't run.
That had nothing to do with running. The disc had nothing to do with running. The disc had to do with lying around lazy.
Definitely not lying around this morning. We're up bright and early at the crack of dawn, even if the sun is not going to pop out this morning. And this is really just going to be a chat about the renewable energy transition. You know, your perspective on it, what forms your perspective on it. These are the type of chats that when I was starting in the industry from scratch, not knowing anything a year ago, I was looking around for just to help me get my understanding And we met at a networking event a couple weeks ago now called the Energy Dinner. And I knew I was in the right place when I was crossing the street because I heard someone talking about batteries and energy in a German accent. Germanish accent?
Yeah.
That was yourself. So before I get into maybe your opinions on the big things, what forms that opinion, just what's the elevator pitch for what you do, just so people have a quick sense of who you are and where you're coming from. David, you're an entrepreneur. You've run a networking group here called Silicon Beach for a while, and you've got a startup. The elevator pitch.
Okay, the elevator pitch for the startup. We are helping the food and beverage industry to decarbonize their point-of-sale cooling and heating appliances with appliance-level batteries and smart charging cycles.
So an appliance-level battery, is that a concept that is new to people, like most people, like it is to me? The idea of that's a UPS, that's a backup power supply kind of thing you'd have in a computer or something.
Right, we use it on computers to secure the operation of computers, right?
Yep.
But we do not use it yet broadly on heating, cooling, kitchen appliances to actually help the shift of usage to use the renewable energy from midday. Here in Australia, we are blessed with a lot of regular sun.
Yep.
Using that surplus and energy when actually we go for dinner and do cooking the most and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, so making that power draw for those appliances come from a battery that was filled during times of high renewable supply to the grid.
Exactly.
All right, so it's a way of time shifting certain appliances' power use.
It is, and when we talk about the food and beverage industry, but people might not know, but when they go into a petrol station or into a grocery store or a corner store and there is a branded fridge there or a branded vending machine, often they are owned by the food and beverage producers.
Yep.
Yet they do not control what energy goes into them at the point of sale. So they have to assume that all the energy, all the CO2 emitted generating that energy is actually dirty, right? Yep. So that's their assumption in their ESG reporting at the moment.
Yes.
So what we do is we say, okay, we develop the algorithms that shows you how much is really green, how much is gray, black energy,
yep,
and how much we can actually save you by putting a battery on there.
Okay, that's interesting. I just want to just delve into that a little bit deeper. So Coca-Cola, Amatil, the big brand that owns the fridge, they're putting it into this corner store and they're saying, all right, you know, you're a corner store, you're a servo, you're a gas station. We're going to spare you the capital expense of owning this fridge. We're going to put that in, but you're going to plug it into your wall. It'll be on your power bill. But the big brand, let's use Coke, don't sue us, Coke, is for their own ESG reporting. They're saying, oh, well, we've got this fleet of fridges that is deployed out into the market. And we're reporting on, the power use from it. And we just have to use, the grid average or assume the worst and say it's the worst possible power. Interesting that they're doing that level of reporting. I mean, that level of reporting is not going anywhere. In fact, it's getting more onerous, more accurate, more demanding as governments get more and more, ramping up pressure on companies, rightly, to report on these things. So it's really interesting. You're making an appliance level energy intervention for the sake of a big corporate's ESG reporting. You're using that as the lever to make a real world change just so it's different on a report.
Right.
That's really cool.
We did not come up with that idea in the first place. Our first idea was that we need much more energy storage, right?
Yeah.
We in Australia, CSIRO's estimated we need 46 gigawatt hours additional energy capacity in Australia, right?
Which compared to the size of the Australian grid right now, that's a sizable percentage of it. I should know it offhand, but 46 gigawatt hours, that's a big number.
It is, and one solution will not fix it, right?
No.
And the utility-sized batteries alone will not fix it either.
No.
And the problem with such big installations, there is a long approval process to from I have an idea, I want to put a battery somewhere, finding the right suburb, getting on the same page, talking to the grid operator, how can we connect it, and stuff like that. It can take 5 to 7 years from actually start the, having the thought to getting the battery onto the grid, right? Yeah. Home batteries, solar home batteries are a lovely idea, but the pickup is low.
Yeah.
Very slow. It's less than 3% of the homes that have roof solar actually installing a battery because the return on investment is not very attractive yet, right?
Yeah.
All the energy providers want to get those batteries out there, but they struggle. So what is the other option? We find an industry that does have another need that we can solve with batteries.
Yeah.
And through that, we can field a fleet of batteries out there that is solving two problems with one strike.
Yeah, so you're piggybacking a battery onto solving another solution. And you wonder just how replicable that is across the entire industry. Like, if we need to solve for something anyway, let's get more distributed energy resources into it. And like, what the amazing paradigm shift of having batteries available is that like, after the invention of fire, we didn't just keep centralized fires. Everyone had their own little fire. And you're just like, well, we've got this fusion reactor in the sky called the sun, and we get a lot of its benefit here in Australia. And if we're capturing more of it ourselves and storing it ourselves, the paradigm is amazingly different than what we have today. But yeah, we have to find all these weird, innovative routes into bringing it down to the day-to-day level. All right, that's a really, really cool startup. Where is it now, and sort of what's happened to date on it, and sort of what's next for it?
We're working right now on proof of concepts and prototypes, participating in the innovation challenge competition of the City of Melbourne, which energy storage is one of their topics.
Yep.
So the idea is that we either partner with Power Melbourne, who are creating basically energy contracts for residents and shop owners within the city themselves to serve them better, connected to the utility batteries, the neighborhood batteries that they install, find the right energy partner, and then we will offer a package out of our batteries and a reduced energy price to shop owners in the City of Melbourne.
Yeah, just make it real easy to say yes to, because the fundamentals of it are great. And even though we were about to see a slight decrease in Victorian power prices, I'm not sure if you caught this morning at all that the CEO of Alinta has come out and said, well, at a press club interview, and he said, well, you know, the point of the press club is that you kind of hear some honest truths, some hard truths. And he said, well, power prices are going up in the future, and they're not coming down until we get the transition done. The amount of underlying change that needs to happen and needs to be paid for means someone's going to foot the bill, and it's probably going to be the taxpayer in some form, because ultimately it always is. So the winds are in your direction for a solution like this.
Think about a restaurant or a cafe, right?
Yep.
Those coffee machines took truckloads of energy, compressors, heating, whatsoever.
Yep.
Kitchens do have ovens, cooking plates,
yep,
and stuff like that. We're talking about electrification of all that kitchen equipment anyway, because gas will never be green, right?
Yeah.
But then we still have coffees are mainly consumed in the morning when the first price peak is in the grid, right?
Yep.
Restaurants are operating mainly in the evenings when people going out for dinner, so lunchtime, but also then in the evenings when people coming out for dinner, when we have the highest prices on the grid, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's painful to be a restaurant in so many ways.
So if we can put batteries in there without having to get permissions from someone, right? Because we do it in an appliance level.
Yep.
We can really help them reduce their energy costs dramatically in partnership with an energy retailer. And we can support the whole transition to green energy by actually accepting that peak power during the midday, and making it useful when it's really required.
This is great. So I've got I've done my innings, my years in hospo, and it's nice that actually something is looking to reduce their costs and make them less of a price taker, where they're always kind of at the, you know, a restaurant is at the bottom of multiple different supply chains where they're stuck being the end consumer and having very little control or power in those relationships. And being able to change it even slightly for the power company dynamic and the power bills they're paying while they're under great pressure to electrify, meaning they'll be exposed to much higher bills and hopefully, you know, get off gas and have all these other benefits. But that's wonderful. That's a really cool idea. I'll be watching that very closely. So pivoting to sort of who is David and how did he form his perspective on the power sector? When did energy sort of become a thing to you? Because for so many people I talk to who aren't in the industry, they've never thought about power. And at some stage, I assume that there was a pre kind of energy awareness in David. And then how did that change? Or sort of maybe some of the main changes or times where things changed for you.
You picked a German accent, so yeah. Born and raised in Germany, I was good in mathematics and physics, so then you, in Germany, they make an engineer out of you.
Absolutely.
That's what I became, a mechanical mechatronics engineer, doing machine tools. Big customers, automotive, aerospace industry, high-priced production machines. I don't think that there's any engineer out there who does not want to build more efficient machines, right, or processes, right?
So straight away there's that understanding of energy and the conservation and efficient use of energy.
Right.
Embedded in your studies. So, from the time you were maybe a first or second year student, this kind of the nature of energy was made aware to you, or you developed a conceptual understanding of it.
Yes, I understand enough of physics that I know that perpetual motion is not a real thing.
Good. All right, everyone needs to develop that understanding so they can just scroll past those videos.
But the interesting thing that I've learned, right, your customers are paying in between $500,000 to $40 million for the machines that I've or my team designed.
Yep.
They never had as a top priority low energy consumption in that, right?
Yep.
It was faster cycle times, higher precision, right? If you can double the cycle time, the energy cost per part goes down probably as well, right? But the overall energy consumption of a plant of manufacturing does not go down.
Yep.
So it was always really how can we make things cheaper and better,
yep.
But energy was not a driving factor because energy was still too cheap.
Yes. Yep.
Back then, Germany once led the world in solar technology before the government screwed it up. I worked in Germany for a while, then I got an Australian company, a competitor of the company that worked in Germany, got interested in me, pursued me quite hard, and finally I came to Australia, and that was in 2011.
Yep.
Yeah, 2011. And then I started looking around and said, holy crap, so much sun, why is there no solar around here?
Yep.
And back then in 2011, people looked at me, why the hell? What should we do with solar, right?
Yeah.
I was completely puzzled, and I spoke to engineers or colleagues at the firm that I've worked for, the company I've worked for, and they said, yes, I took a year off. I wanted to bring solar to Australia, and I just, they crashed me. I couldn't sell one panel.
Oh, no.
But then things moved really fast. After 1 year, I went back to Germany, stayed with the company. 2012 to 2015, I was back in Germany. In 2015, I came back to Australia, still with the same company, and suddenly everyone had solar, and solar was the big thing. And it was like solar was invented in Australia.
Yeah, it's all timing, isn't it? I'm sure your pitch wasn't bad, it's just it hadn't made its way into the public consciousness yet. And didn't have those crazy people, like one on every street, who jumped on a very good thing when they saw it with the premium feed-in tariffs and spent the money and bought themselves some great returns for the next decade and a half. But so here, but for a whisker, you were one of the solar pioneers in Australia, but you're back. It happened. And what next?
Yeah, what next? I got out of my corporate job a while ago, started to devil around in the startup ecosystem,
yep.
Running a large community with a focus on UN Sustainable Development Goal startups.
Yep.
Learning a lot about the startup journey, went through multiple accelerators, pre-accelerator programs, did coaching, mentoring myself. And then in last year, I got into the Antler cohort with another idea of mine, enhancing the startup experience, helping more people to actually get their ideas out of their head, because I feel especially that engineers, scientists here in Australia are not really strongly supported in getting that stuff out here.
Yep.
But anyway, didn't succeed with that, but had two people in the cohort, both active in energy, one in solar and one in batteries. I played around with both, and at the end of the program, we decided that we partner on that one startup. And the idea of that was bring plug and play batteries to Australia. As you said earlier, there are no solar panels on apartment houses in the city, high population density areas. Yeah. They can't have enough solar, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people don't own the properties that they live in and in apartments, right? If we can make it easier for everyone to get into the battery game, cutting out the $2,000 to $3,000 for the electrician to install the batteries,
yep.
That could be a game changer to roll out more batteries, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
But Australia is not very friendly to plug and play stuff.
No, we've got to protect our Sparkies and their lifestyles and our safety ratings and reasons why, wow, we could never change.
Right, so getting around AS4777 is tricky, and just talking to experts about it, there was a lot of tension just mentioning it.
The first time you read or heard AS4777, did you have an inkling then of how much those two letters and four numbers would become your personal nemesis and haunt your dreams for years to come? Because it's so innocuous sounding. It's just
I wouldn't go that far. you choose your battles, right?
Yeah.
The startup journey, like any product development, I always describe it. It's like you're in front of a brick wall, right? And you want to get on the other side.
Yep.
And you push against those stones, those bricks, right?
Yep.
And you push against all of them until you feel movement in one of them,
yeah.
Right? When there is AS4777 here and
yep.
There is no movement at all, but there is scope 3 carbon emission reduction over
yes.
There,
yeah.
I take the stone that is moving.
Because the AS4777 is a boulder. It's a big brick. All right, cool. So I just, a quick question about kind of who you are as a person, as this, you know, German engineer who went through that pipeline and development and worked at corporates for years. Was there always this kind of spark of entrepreneurialism and interest in startups? Because is there a fertile ground in the areas you are in? Like, were you exposed to people who are kind of also disruptors and innovators and, you know, all the words we associate with startups? Or was this something you came across later and were like, oh, this resonates with me, but I hadn't been exposed to it before? Because in my head, I think of the German system very much as a series of engineering juggernaut monoliths where it's very, everyone kind of takes responsibility for their thing, and there's bottom-up efficiencies and improvements, but there's top-down plans and goals and direction. If that's not too broad of a assumption, which it is.
Interesting. Probably we have to do an episode of this podcast or another podcast,
yeah,
just
absolutely.
Around that topic. Question. No, I was actually supposed to become an entrepreneur when I left high school, but I fell to familiar pressure.
Yeah.
Right. So I was. I had teachers that highly recommended to me not to go into the corporate world because I'm not a very diplomatic person.
Mm.
I say things straightforward.
Yep.
Which does not resonate too well with all people.
Yep.
Interestingly, yes, I had my first startup experience then anyway in Cologne when I was 20. That's when I worked, had a side gig in a startup, building exoskeletons for body motion capturing technology. pretty cool stuff. We had a lot of sports stars back then.
Yep.
Going into those suits and then having their avatars running around. That was already 25 years ago now, right?
Yeah, yep. So kids playing FIFA today have you partially to thank for the motion capture.
Mm.
That's cool.
So that was my first experience as an employee. And then I went through my first accelerator when only around the same time in Cologne. And now, funny that you say it, energy. My idea back then was smartphones were coming up later, but mobile phones were coming up that time around, right? And batteries were not very good at that time around, or we believed that they're not very good. The phones lasted 3 days because they did not have the functionality that we have today, right?
Yeah.
But I thought, okay, we're moving around, right? Right now we're moving around. We're basically putting energy out there.
Piezoelectrics?
Piezoelectrics, yeah. Right? So at my job at the startup, I designed the data glove, right? So having sensors that on each finger to actually track the movement.
Yep.
And basically with every bend, there was a voltage generator, right? Electricity. So I thought, okay, we can put all piezo stuff anywhere in clothing, in shoes especially, right?
Yep.
And we could harness the wasted energy from our movements throughout the day and use that to recharge our phones back then. Or our Walkmans, whatever we had, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Personal electronics.
Right. I had a guy who was interested in it, but I got distracted by this other thing because there was the wind turbine boom in Germany just coming along. And I said, okay, I joined this other team of getting more wind turbines out there instead. And that did not turn out in something workable. So somehow after that journey, after 2 years dwelling around in the startup ecosystem there, I stuck to, okay, get my degree, get a job. And that's where then the two stories connect now.
Interesting. So we can look at it either one of two ways that... Well, you know, there's a lot more wind turbines in the world than charging ports in your pants that are charged from your shoes movement. So you made the right choice. Or we could have all been charging our devices from piezoelectrics if David had stuck to it and had been the pioneer in technology that's now having its moment from Dune 2, being like, oh, this is a still suit. It's powered by the movements of the suit. Everyone's like, oh, that's so cool and sci-fi, and wouldn't that be nice? And you're like, yeah, we could have done that, potentially, with some breakthroughs. What do you wish you'd known 10 years ago in terms of the energy industry? And what's a question you should have asked and a concept you should have understood sooner?
Not a concept, just that I should be in that place, because it's dear to my heart, it gives me purpose, it fulfills me, right? Which general manufacturing does not do in the same way, right?
Mm.
So really contributing to actually save or as much of the nature, the environment, the biosphere that we still have left,
mm-hmm.
Gives me much more motivation than just making more money out of less.
Yeah. So energy, you found a passion in it, you're excited to work in it. Manufacturing, general manufacturing, a bit more soulless, transactional, purposeless, not too strong of words.
Or cars, right? Germany, where the whole economy is built on cars and supply industry of cars, right? And that's where I supplied machines to as well, or designed machines for. But it's just not sustainable with 8 billion plus people that everyone gets a car, even if it's an electric car, right?
Yeah.
It is not sustainable. We have to, in thinking about the utilization of a car, right? Mm-hmm. Driving it for 15 to half an hour in the morning, driving it for another half an hour in the evening, and the rest of the day it stands around.
Yeah,
but that it's really bad utilization of such an expensive resource.
Yes.
So we have to get away from that. So building more cars, so more people can have more cars, is not helping us save the planet.
Yes. And you don't feel those kind of incontrovertible, fundamental flaws with the energy industry. I guess this is fundamentally the conversations I'm having on here and why I'm doing this is it's the energy transition. It's like, how is it possible to work in a space now where we're confronting any kind of fundamental intrinsic issues that the industry has and looking at ways to change them and improve them? I guess if you wake up in the morning and feel excited about working in energy, why? Like, what is different about this space that gives you that passion and that excitement and energy? Energy was a poor choice of words because I'm talking about energy. Energy for energy. Passion for the energy industry.
Because even if we all change our lifestyles and reduce our energy consumption, which we should do, and the consumption of a lot of things we overconsume, we need energy. To sustain our life, 8 billion counting, to sustain our life, we need energy. 70% of CO2 emissions are coming from energy production, something like that. Challenge me on that number. We can get the efficiency better, but we still need truckloads of energy. Mm-hmm. Traveling the world, right, flying, is not a necessity for our survival.
No.
It is nice to have, and it gives us, I see the world. Yeah. But we can have wonderful lives by just traveling within our neighborhood. You went for a hike, a two-hour drive, right?
Absolutely.
That's completely good enough for living a good life.
Yeah. So you're right. Like the amount of work we do on transport is, it's up Maslow's hierarchy. It's beyond the needs section of life, and it's into the wants and the nice to haves. So it's nice working on something that is fundamental, and I guess at a time of fear and uncertainty and a great change in the world, it's nice working on something that is essential. The thing I like about this not being in a studio is we can just take a second and reflect, and I don't have to try to fill the air, not on like an hour-long booking or something. This is very good. Thank you, David. Appreciate your generosity.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I'm looking forward to have more of those energy walks in the future.
Oh, absolutely. It's a complete win-win for me, because if I can, organize that and then have chats with people, people come to me.
Yeah, and interesting twist.
David and I walked on for another kilometer or so, completed the loop around the Albert Park Lake, and then we regrouped at the bottom of the lake with a beautiful backdrop of the city of Melbourne and did a quick recap of the conversation and walk we just had. I hope what you heard from that was it was such a relaxed environment to have a chat about the industry we're both so passionate about and working in. David with the startup and me with my career. And it was such a great venue to have those types of chats. And so much more relaxing than any studio experience I'd had. And I had gotten to the point that in the studio I felt comfortable, but didn't feel as relaxed as I felt this morning, walking around Albert Park Lake with the joggers and the birds and the environment around me. I want to thank David so much for his generosity and his willingness to be so open and share his stories and deal with some of my off-the-wall questions, which most of which I've cut and spared you from. But it was great getting into that kind of cerebral, blue sky, blank canvas space with David. And I'm really excited to host Energy Walks around Melbourne. This is definitely a follow-on from the Energy Dinner we had just about a month ago where I first met David. And if you're working in the industry and that sounds like something you'd like to be a part of, a chance to take a walk around somewhere beautiful with like-minded people and talk about the industry, the sector, where it's all going, where we're all coming from, how we all fit together and relate to each other. In an industry where things can be quite competitive, where relationships can be, professional, but I find that getting to know the people across the sector, it just reaps so many benefits. I've learned that the interpersonal relationships I invest in, personally and professionally, always pay off in delightfully unexpected ways. So, if you're interested, there's a link in the show notes to this episode, and I'd love to see you there and have you on one of our energy walks. And if you'd like to be interviewed for this show, just let me know. You can reach me at hello@hearmedia.studio. If you've got a question about the energy industry, something you've been gnawing on or looking at or just want to know an answer to, please just send that through. I'd love to get that answered for you and to learn along the way myself. Thank you so much for joining me and David on our walk around Albert Park Lake. And I look forward to you tuning in again soon for another transmission. The music and transmission is from Tom Day. Thank you, Tom. You can find more of his amazing studio work and field recordings and videography at tomday.me. If you work or are interested in the renewable energy transition, I'm actively on the lookout for people to chat with, and I welcome questions. What do you want to know about the transition? If you have questions, I want to get you answers. So please don't be a stranger. Drop an email to hello@hearmedia.studio. That's hello@hearmedia.studio. Or of course, find links to our socials in our show notes. This show is produced by Hear Media, a boutique audio agency in Narm, Melbourne. To learn more and get in touch, head to hearmedia.studio. That's HERE media.studio.